What are you going to do, Commissioner?
There's only one thing we can do.
Batman! Sir, it's the Batphone.
Yes, Commissioner. Batman? We'll be right there.
Biff, bam, pow. Batman. This is Batman Land.
Be careful. Maybe a trap.
Each week we chat about the 1966 Batman TV show.
We're Batman and Robin, the crime fighters.
We discuss the episodes that aired this week on SBS Viceland. My name is Dan Barrett. I work at the SBS site, The Guide. And look, I don't want to speak ill of my co-host, but around the office we do call him the Ice Queen. It's my always chilly colleague, Nick Bassine.
I took that as a compliment.
As well you should. I mean, I didn't realise you knew.
Oh, I knew.
Okay, well, this makes it awkward. Now, joining us in the Batman Land cave this week, it's a freelancer whose work you may have read on CBR and multiversity.com. It's the cool as ice, Chris Neal.
Ice to see you.
Oh, no. I knew someone was going to do it, and I didn't think it'd be this early into the podcast.
Setting up high expectations.
Look, it's definitely something. Let's establish credentials. Who are you? What's your deal?
My name is Chris. I'm a freelance pop culture writer. I've written mostly about comic stuff.
Are you a DC or Marvel guy?
I don't know. That's a really hard question. Like, there are certain things I like about both of them. Like, at the moment, I think I'm vibing more with, like, what DC is putting out on the stands, but probably overall, maybe Marvel. Like, my favorite superhero stuff is Daredevil and the X-Men.
And are you just like a comics guy, or is like the broader like multimedia world of superheroes that draws you in?
I guess I'm a comics guy in that like I'm not just superheroes. Like I worked in a comic store for 3 years, and like I love so many different things outside of like that superhero genre. Like yeah, I love Love and Rockets and like Daniel Clowes 8-Ball. Like those are probably like two of my all-time favorite series. Like Akira, I think, is like one of the best comics ever made.
On this subject, let's give a recommendation. What's a good non-superhero book that people should be reading right now? Now that you're on the spot.
I think the best like literally my favorite comic that's being published at the moment is coming out from Image. It's called The Wicked and the Divine. Yep. It's by a guy called Kieran Gillen and an artist called Jamie McKelvey. And the concept is every 90 years, literal gods reincarnate as like the big pop culture figures of the era. So like back in the 20s, they were like jazz age poets and writers. So like F. Scott Fitzgerald and stuff like that. But the modern version of that is they reincarnated as like musical pop stars. So it's not Kanye West and not Taylor Swift figures. And the idea of it behind
but
it
obviously
is,
they absolutely are.
Yeah, like yeah, one of them literally looks like Kanye West. And the concept behind it is like we treat celebrities like gods. So like what if they were literally gods? Week, like month in, month out, that is like the best book on the stands. Just really strong characters and like really, really nicely built world and just stuff that's been like it's coming to the end of its arc now. I think it's like 10 issues out from finish. It's up to issue like 40 at the moment. And just stuff that like they've set up like 3-4 years ago is starting to pay off. Like really good long-term storytelling. Like I think it definitely stands shoulder to shoulder with a lot of like big popular non-superhero books like The Sandman from the 90s and like Preacher. Like everyone loves those series. And I think Wicked and Divine has the makings of being one of those like non-superhero, but like really, really good classic comics.
Yeah, so now that readers like Chris have put in the hard yards and, you know, they've actually supported the book during all this time, people can just swoop in now and not have to worry about having to see things pay off. It'll be like a weekend read.
Can I ask you a comic book store question?
Yeah, sure.
You know those $1,000 figurines of a 2-foot-tall Batman or whatever?
Yeah,
do people
yeah
buy that stuff?
Yeah, they do. And they get weirdly specific about them. Like, I remember we got in, like, some fancy Batman statue and we would always get two of them in because we'd have one for display and then we'd have one at the back. So it was kind of like mint in box and pristine. And like a guy came in to like buy one and he was like, can I see it and all that and stuff. And he pulled it out and started like inspecting the box and stuff. And then like took it out and inspected the figure and all that. And was like, oh, this part where it's been molded and like painted and stuff, the paint job isn't good. Can I get a discount for it? And I was just like, no, absolutely not. Like, this is how it's come. Either you can buy it or you don't. And he was like, oh, all right. And like he took it and packed it all up and like left and didn't buy it. And I was like, oh, that's weird. And then apparently he came back a few days later because a lot of those figures, they do like limited runs. So they're like one of 250. He came back and was like,
and they're all numbered.
Yeah, they're all numbered and stuff. Mm. He came back and was like, well, the reselling on eBay for like twice of what it is here. So I guess I have no other choice but to buy it. But I'm not happy about it. And it's like, well, I don't care, man. Just take your Batman statue home and put it in your cupboard so like it'll never see the light of day and like depreciate in value.
Are they keeping it in the box?
some are, some aren't. Like, I have a friend who buys all, like, he's into, like, the figures and stuff, and he has, like, a glass cabinet where, like, each level is a certain thing. Like, he has one that's all, like, Spider-Man figures and one that's Star Wars ones, and, like, has them out in, like, a nice display. And, like, those look nice. And, like, I have a couple figures as well. Like, I'm not big into it because I can't wrap my head around paying triple figures for, like, a statue I'm going to put on my shelf and be like, that looks pretty. Can't do anything else with it now. But, like, yeah, I know some just, like, they will buy it and they'll put it away and, like, keep it mint. It's the same thing that you get a lot of comic book collectors who come in and, like, will buy copies and, like, bag them and board them or, like, put them in the, like, CGC graded, like, plastic coffins and, like, put them away and be like, this is like airtight so it can't like age over time and people can't touch it with their like gross sticky fingers and it's just here forever entombed in this prison. And it's like, I guess that's some way to enjoy it.
Yeah, for me, I like it if it's a bathtub toy, something you can use.
How much time are you spending in a bathtub on a weekly basis?
I do a lot of my best writing in the bathtub, just like Dalton Trumbo.
I understand that reference.
And just like the seal in this episode. But we'll get to that. I remember there was a seal.
Yeah, and a bathtub. Yeah. It's in a bathtub.
And in a bathtub. But Nick, I don't really remember what happened in these episodes.
Come on.
I do know that we've got two episodes here. There was one called I Spy, which aired on the 29th of March, 1967. And its follow-up episode, The Duo Defy, which aired on the 30th of March, 1967. The last week, we're going to have two Batman episodes that aired in the 1 week. Because next week, it went weekly.
I know, I'm going to miss it.
Yeah. But Nick, I don't remember what happened. What happened?
Okay, so some professor is taking a formula to make instant ice to Gotham on a boat, but it's stopped by a fake iceberg.
An iceberg?
Commandeered by Dr. Freeze, who kidnaps the professor.
The jet nozzles in this color keep me permanently in a sub-zero temperature.
He wants to cover the entire Earth with an ice cap.
Mr. Freeze wants what?
But the professor won't give up the formula.
We'll see about that, Professor.
Freeze sends a homing seal to the police with a ransom note for the professor.
Right, he flipped right in here.
Batman and Robin bring a suitcase full of phony money to Mr. Freeze, who tosses the wimps into a sub-zero temperature vaporizing cabinet.
You're not even chilly!
They get out of it through the escape hatch, which Mr. Freeze apparently didn't know about.
Holy escape hatch!
Batman and Robin take a nap.
Even crime fighters need their sleep, Robin.
Mr. Freeze threatens the President of the United States. He's going to freeze the country.
Holy chillblains!
Batman and Robin wake up from their nap.
Ready, old chump?
You bet.
Here we go.
Let the messenger seal go and follow it to Mr. Freeze's iceberg.
And do I have a chilling clincher for the Cape Crusaders.
There's a fight involving a stuffed polar bear and the police show up in parkas.
Okay, so let's maybe just focus on, I think, maybe the most important thing that happened in these two-part episodes. Mm-hmm. Batman and Robin, Batman with his thirst for justice, his quest, which sees no impediment, he stops and takes a nap.
Yeah, he yawns.
A little bit of sleepy time.
He's tired after some very minimal crime fighting, minimal effort. And he's tired. I mean, this show surprises me. Every episode, there's something new in it. And that felt like a new low for Batman to do nothing.
Can I propose something that may be taking place here? You may have noticed in the very first episode of this two-parter, there's no Alfred Pennyworth to be seen. This is the only time that Alan Napier hasn't appeared in an episode to date.
Oh, that's interesting.
Could it be that maybe Alfred's off for the week? And there's
he's
just
been
like
doing
well, there's a whole lot of work to be done. Yeah, he's vacuuming. He's doing a bit of dusting.
I assumed Alfred was off making the weird, like, slot car room they have at the end of the second episode.
That's a good call.
Like, they were just like, oh, look, we got to go fight some crime, Alfred.
Oh, wait, he
can
was
you go
at the end.
Do this? He comes in the second episode, but not in the first episode. So I assume he was off, like, adding another room to the stately Wayne Manor and being like, this is just the slot car room. It'll get used heaps. Like, put all the money down and we'll make it now.
Yeah, because Bruce does say at one point, how did you get away with, like, creating this room without me knowing about it?
Yeah, it was really confusing.
Oh, that's right. The whole time you
I thought he's
been
supposed to be the world's greatest detective.
I know, you'd think.
Yeah, I thought maybe the seal had eaten him.
Can we talk about the seal?
Please.
I brought notes, and on my notes, there's like a couple things in all caps, and one of them is just seal messenger, and then Chekhov's seal, because that seal comes back and helps, like, without that seal, they're not able to, like, track down Mr. Freeze. Like, they set it all up. They're like, just keep watching that seal. It's going to pay off.
They don't use the phrase Chekhov's seal during the show, do they?
They don't. They should have.
No, they really should. Do you want to explain Chekhov's seal? Obviously, a reference to Chekhov's gun. And what's the principle behind Chekhov's gun?
Chekhov's gun is that, like, if you introduce a gun in a scene, like, early on in, like, your story or whatever, that has to come back into use later in the story. So if you set something up,
it like
has
a homing
to come back
seal.
Yeah, where it's like, we're going to set up the seal and he's here and they just kind of, like, there's a weird bit where they go back to the police precinct and they're like, Chief O'Hara, where's the seal? And Chief O'Hara is like really casual, just like, oh, it's in a bathtub on the second level. And it's like, what? Like, why are you so casual about this like absolutely abnormal
Do you know
situation?
How many seals go through the Gotham Police Department office on a regular basis?
Why would there be a bathtub like the in the police department?
Sometimes crime is sweaty work. Yeah,
there'd
I mean,
be showers.
Sometimes you want to relax.
Even in the 60s.
There's some police officers who do their best writing and work in the bathtubs. So.
Touche.
I feel like touché. The bathtub is where Commissioner Gordon goes to like unwind about Chief O'Hara. Because I feel like Commissioner Gordon hates Chief O'Hara a lot. Because there's a bit in this where like they're talking about the president's teleprompter getting frozen. And like Commissioner Gordon like explains it all. And like Chief, he's like, what do you think the president saw when he looked out in his teleprompter? And Chief O'Hara goes, his speech? And then Commissioner Gordon, and like cuts really, really fast. Commissioner Gordon going, no, it was frozen. And I was like, whoa, chill out, Commish. Like, yeah. Let's not fly off the handle here. Like, he's just, you know, you ask him a question and that's the best answer he could give you.
Well, to be fair, Chief O'Hara is a certifiable dunce.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know how he got into his position of power.
I imagine that he, like, and many of the other people on the police force in Gotham City have hit their head on that bathtub and are just operating at half capacity.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if we've talked about this on a podcast before. We may have. Apparently, Stafford Rep, who played Chief O'Hara, and Neil Hamilton, who plays Commissioner Gordon, they hated each other. Like, the sort of had scene after scene working side by side, and they just did not get along. Neil Hamilton particularly was very, very spiny, I guess, to deal with on the set.
That makes a lot of sense. That puts a lot of things in context here.
It really does. And you look at the two of them, and you can tell, like, occasionally there'll be, like, glances and gestures where you can tell that they are in a very unpleasant situation.
Well, that makes me a little sad, because it's just, he's such a goofball.
I'd like to apologize. I'm sorry, Nick, for breaking the facade.
You'd think they'd have a little bit more perspective about what the happiness they're bringing to children and get along.
Can we talk about Emma Strunk?
Emma Strunk. I'm Glacier Glaze, Batman.
Which may be my favorite name in all of TV and films at this point.
Don't you mean Glacier Glaze?
I know her as Glacier Glaze.
Yeah. Well, I know her as the world-renowned skating queen, now known as Glacier Glaze.
Have you ever been to a skating show, an ice skating show?
At the Bruce Wayne Ice Arena or otherwise?
Not an ice skating. I think I might have gone to like Disney on Ice when I was really, really young. Like I have like fume, like childhood like fume memories of that, of like, I vaguely remember being 5 and doing that.
I was watching Batman and Robin with the red phone, and there was the Batman talking on the red phone. They did the cross phone thing that I've done a couple of times now on the show.
Yes.
Which never gets old comedically. But I was watching Robin leaning in to try to hear what's going on in a telephone handset. And we've seen this a number of times, and it's only now I've realized, why doesn't Batman have a speakerphone?
Well, I assume that technology, along with connecting a three-way phone call, it just was not invented.
He's got back computers downstairs, a computer for every occasion. He can't put a speaker on a phone.
I feel like I feel like it's the, if he puts it on speakerphone, you get that like, oh, you're clearly talking on a speakerphone, like that echo you get. And then like Chief O'Hara in there being like, why does it sound like Bruce Wayne is in the same room as Batman on the phone at the moment? Like,
also, he's just holding the other receiver up to his chest.
Yeah.
Like that's going to totally mute it. They're going to hear both sides of the conversation. I did think that was one of my favorite Adam West acting moments, though. That's some of his best work.
It was very impressive.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And we will have a dummy package of money.
A dummy package of money? That sounds risky. Risk is our business, Mr. Wayne. Of course, Batman, I have the same faith in you that all of Gotham City has. I hope Robin and I are deserving of that faith.
Have we seen Batman and Robin exit through the commissioner's window before?
I would have to assume that, yes.
We've seen villains come through the window. I think the Riddler came through the window, maybe like the John Aston Riddler. But I don't remember Batman and Robin. And when they exited, this is really me segueing to the celebrity cameo of the man popping his head out the window.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Celebrity cameo in quotes.
Who was familiar with the Carpet King?
All I know about the Carpet King is apparently he's just some dude who owns like a carpet chain and apparently sold a carpet to the show's executive producer. And
yeah, William Dozier.
He must have loved that carpet and he's just like, nice man, this shag on my feet, pristine. I do this little show called Batman, you want to pop your head out, do a little cameo.
Yeah, so apparently in Southern California he was very well known because there were like jingles on the radio and everyone knew the Carpet King from that. But outside of that, people are scratching their heads in a way that I'm looking at Nick's face right now. He has never looked more confused.
I was so confused. And I looked up the Carpet King, and I found out that Carpet King makes flooring easy. We specialize in installation of brand name flooring products and warrant your install for life. I had to really dig around to find out who the hell this person was.
Does the Carpet King preside over the carpet court? That's the Australian one, yeah?
Yeah, I presume so. Yeah.
Carpet court, get at me. Hook us up.
Also, did you notice that Batman, the show, in addition to exhibiting generally fascistic tendencies and supporting the Vietnam War, they're also monarchists?
Mm. Yeah.
With their pro-queen diatribe. Like,
there is no king. There's only a queen
now. And she's a fine lady at that.
Look, I did notice that. I also noticed that usually there's a few celebrities to note. Carpet King aside, there were two prominent names in this week's
episode.
Big
names.
Who were the two that stood out for you?
Eli Wallach is huge.
He is huge. There was a comment made in one of the articles I was reading about the episode. He got more fan mail for his appearance as Mr. Freeze than any other role he's played in his career.
I know him from The Magnificent Seven and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which is my favorite Western of all time.
That's my favorite movie of all time as well.
It's amazing, yeah. That movie.
I was really confused. I assumed that, like, this episode was going to end with, like, Batman leaving Mr. Freeze precariously perched on
that
top of, like, a,
like,
melting thing while, like, Mr. Freeze is in a noose and, like, Batman just rolls into the sunset.
Oh, that would have been so great.
I don't know. I had expectations and they didn't really pan out.
Yeah, I love that movie, and it was a pleasure to see Eli Wallach doing his German accent, I guess.
Well, because the German accent was established with the previous two actors. You had Otto Preminger previously there, but also George Sanders.
Is Mr. Freeze, did you say that Mr. Freeze is a... There are some of these bad guys that are invented, or some of these characters are invented on the show and then go into the comics. Like Batgirl, is that right? Batgirl was invented.
Batgirl was always in the comics.
It was Batwoman initially, and then Batgirl a few years after that.
Yeah,
but the show did start some people.
Yeah,
characters.
Like
Mr. Freeze. I'm pretty
Egghead
sure.
Is a TV show first. Mr. Freeze was comics.
Oh, was he
first? He was originally Dr. Zero.
That's right.
All right.
And then I think they changed him to Mr. Freeze because, like, Dr. Zero is, I don't know. It's a weirder name.
I thought Dr. Zero had existed, and then he became Mr. Freeze in the show, and then that went into the comics.
I think so, yeah. I think the show influenced that.
I'm trying to remember previous Wikipedia research on this one.
I was just going to say that my favorite Eli Wallach performance is in the show Whoopi.
I see. I thought you were going to go for the Edward Norton, Ben Stiller film, Keeping the Faith.
Oh, I've seen that movie.
Yeah, he plays Ben Stiller's rabbi boss.
No, I'm just joking, obviously. He's been in millions of weird TV shows and just... done little appearances here and there.
And I've referenced this on the podcast before. I'm currently rewatching ER.
Oh, he's been in ER. That's right.
I saw him in a 2003 episode just a couple of days ago.
Did you remember when you saw this? Did you remember him in that episode?
Oh, I mean, I knew it was Eli Wallach, and I remembered him from Keeping the Faith, starring Ben Stiller and Edward Norton.
Does ER stand for Eli Wallach?
I believe that there's an R, which is not Eli Wallach.
He says it with his, like, weird German accent.
Yeah, it's very easy to get that confused. Now, I was saying there was a number of notable people in this episode, Nick. Who else did you notice in here?
I don't know.
Carpet King aside.
It's a man, so I don't know how to pronounce his first name. Elisha? Cook Jr.?
Who was this?
He was the professor who has the formula to make everything ice. He's in Shane, The Maltese Falcon, The Big Sleep, Rosemary's Baby. He's a big character actor.
Okay.
Yeah.
The person that stood at me was from the first episode. There was a character named Carol, very small character, played by an actress named Skye Aubrey. Now, she's notable to me as the ex-wife of Superman movie producer Ilya Salkind.
Oh.
Now, that name probably doesn't mean anything to you, but if you saw the Christopher Reeve Superman movies, okay, the Salkind family controlled the Superman character.
What's the name again?
Ilya Salkind.
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 All right.
They controlled the Superman movies, so essentially they were envisioning them as, like, these big campy movies in the style of the 1960s Batman. Like, this is a family, it's like a Russian name, but I think they might be German? I'm not too sure where the family come from.
You've kind of turned to look at me as though, like, you know the answer to
this
question.
You're Russian.
I did, but anyway, this is the ex-wife of one of the producers of that film.
Okay.
Cold hard fact.
Oh no, get out of here immediately.
Yeah. I think that's the big thing I took away from this episode is watching this made Joel Schumacher's Batman and Robin make a lot more sense. Like, everyone being like, oh, Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's saying all the ice puns and, like, he's ruining the character. And it's like, oh, this is just how he already was, like, in the 60s show. Like, I'd never seen that. He just starts dropping all those lines, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, this
the puns, is, this is what so I'm here for. Many of them. I have a separate, aside pun question. You know how McBain, in a clip from one of his movies on The Simpsons, says ice to see you when he bursts out of that ice sculpture? Is that before or after Batman and Robin?
It's more before.
I think it's before, because Batman and Robin's 97? I want to say that was one of the earliest seasons. Oh, so it would be well before that. Yeah.
So, because I think Arnold Schwarzenegger says...
He does, yes.
Ice to see you. And that's a kind of weird culture eating itself sort of moment. Art. Yeah.
Also, how did McBain fit in that ice sculpture? That cartoon was very unrealistic.
Very unrealistic.
Now, there was one other actor I want to highlight in this one, which is the seal. Can you believe this was the only TV credit that seal had?
Are you trying? Do you want to highlight it because it made you so hungry?
A little bit.
To watch it work.
Oh, God. Can you see my mouth is salivating a little bit more? This is a joke. One should not eat seal. I do like we got to see the Batcopter, which we haven't seen much this season. And when we do, it's usually stock footage, like from the Batman movie. Yeah. They just use the same footage. I think we got some new clips in this episode. It's probably just leftover clips from when they filmed it initially.
The exteriors of the icebergs was very fancy. Yeah. Looked very expensive.
Neither of you are helicopter pilots by any chance.
No, I've been in a helicopter, though, and it's the top most terrifying thing I've ever done in my life.
Okay, well, you're the expert in the room on this. Definitely. Do you think a helicopter could land on one of those icebergs? Because it was very pointy.
How you would do it is you would just run the helicopter right into the iceberg, just kind of get it stuck in there horizontally, and then you'd climb out.
I thought they mentioned, like, they inflated the bat pontoon, so I assume they, like, landed near an iceberg, then jumped off.
Did they mention the bat pontoon?
I heard them say inflate the pontoons.
We'll drop down, but I don't think we can land on it. You'd better inflate the bat pontoons. Check the compass and advise Commissioner Gordon of our location.
Maybe that's a euphemism for something.
I mean, I've never piloted a helicopter. I don't know if that's standard helicopter
practice.
I'll
tell you one thing. Helicopters don't look all that safe now. In the 60s, they look even more unsafe. That dome thing, that's not protecting anybody from anything. That glass dome.
No, also, I feel uncomfortable calling it a helicopter. Can we call it a whirly bird from this point in?
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally.
Now, I just want to talk broadly about the Batman TV show. So this is the season finale for season two. We've seen a progression of these episodes getting, I would maybe safely say, worse and worse as the season's been going on. There's been a couple of good pearlers, like, towards the back end of this season. But season two is obviously a far less effective season than season one.
What are you basing that on?
Just personal taste.
I feel I feel like the second part of this episode wasn't... Like, the first part was good. Like, I liked that first part. And then the second part was just kind of like, oh, we've got about, like, 10 minutes of actual story here. Let's stretch it out. Like, that entire scene at the end with them in the slot cars is like, oh, we've come under by, like, 3 minutes. What can we do? Batman, Robin, and Alfred and the Arnie, they play slot cars in some room that they've built in Wayne Manor. That's genius.
What do you think has gotten worse? The storytelling, the acting, the costumes?
Okay, so I've been looking in the list of episodes and where I feel that it's chronologically just been getting worse and worse. And what I think it is, and I should say, I think it's value in watching these. I still find them very entertaining.
These are much better than the Black Widow ones.
Yeah, which we watched a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were rough.
Yeah.
But what I think is happening is just a sense of desperation happening. So I was looking at some of the production dates and what they were doing roughly around that time. So do you remember there was a period, maybe like 7 or 8 episodes ago, where they had 2 3-part episodes, like a few weeks apart? The word that we'd seen around the place was that they'd shot the first 3-parter as a way to stitch them together as a movie that they're going to package overseas. And like that made sense. When you watch those episodes, it kind of felt a little bit movie structure-like. But then there was like another week, and then there was another 3-parter. And you watched that one, and it felt like a really loose 3 episodes. And I was looking at the dates that they went to air, and it was at the beginning of January in 1967. At the exact same time they were doing that, there's actually a script that was floating around, which was the presentation of Batgirl, which if you get onto YouTube, you can see it. We won't be broadcasting it here on SBS because it's not a TV episode. But it's a short little presentation reel they made with Yvonne Craig, who played Batgirl. And it's them trying out to see whether or not Batgirl works sort of alongside Batman and Robin and how that feels as a TV show. So then at the beginning of season three, they kick off Batgirl and that becomes, you know, part of the lore. But back then they were obviously looking around saying, what do we do with this show? Because the ratings had cratered for season
two. Why is Eli Wallach showing up on the show when it's cratering?
Well, I'm not too sure. I mean, you'd have to ask Eli Wallach's manager from 1966 about this.
Although Eli Wallach will be in Whoopi and or anything, pretty much.
I think his kids told him to do it. Like, I think I was looking up that thing where he's like, I got the most fan mail. I feel like his kids.
Okay.
Someone offered me, like, do you want to do Batman? And his kids were like, do it, Dad! And he was like, okay, I'll go be the Iceman.
Now, if you consider the ratings, so I was looking at what the ratings were doing in season one against season two. In season one, because you got two episodes every week, there's Wednesday and Thursday nights. The Thursday night, the second part of each of these storylines, always rated better. And apparently that's because on Wednesday night, Lost in Space was on. Okay, so you lost a bit of viewership there. As a combined sort of look across the season, generally about like number five on the ratings was the Thursday night episode of Batman. So this is a top five TV show in the US. And then the Wednesday night episode, with the part ones, that ranked about 10. So like these are a big deal as far as TV goes. But come season two, they dropped out entirely from the top 30.
Oh.
Okay, so I mean, it was a huge pop culture phenomenon, but you hit season two and then suddenly the heat had died off.
Interesting.
So you're looking at it and halfway through the season, they're playing around with this presentation video of Batgirl. They're playing around with these three-part episodes. You know, they're really trying to find a way to make sure their cash cow was still going to keep on.
So does it go back up for season three with Batgirl?
No. Otherwise, the show would have seen season four and continued on.
Fun side note, they actually mentioned Batgirl in this episode.
They do. Yeah. Barbara Gordon gets mentioned.
Yeah, Commissioner Gordon, when like everyone's getting frozen, they're like, oh, I'll tell my niece, Barbara, to come in. She's like coming to Gotham City. I'll tell her to come in a day late instead. And it's like, oh.
Yeah.
He has an ice pun. Do you remember the ice pun?
I don't.
And he makes this look after he makes this dumb pun. And he looks so self-satisfied because he made this dumb joke.
What's the joke?
I have an icy situation to contend with. Something so stupid.
Bonnie, please call my daughter Barbara at college. Ask her to take a later plane home. I want to meet her, of course, but I have some cool facts to face before I get to the airport.
Going back to the ratings briefly.
Yeah, so the ratings didn't go up for season three.
So partially to blame for the fact that season two was cratering was Lost in Space is still a huge show.
The Netflix one.
Yeah, back in 67.
Yep.
Okay, and William Dozier, the producer of the show, fan of the Carpet King, and also the narrator that you hear at the beginning and end of every episode.
Is he the narrator?
Yeah.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, I think so. I think it comes from the fact he didn't want to pay an extra person.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's my theory. I can't believe
it's that easy to get on Batman. Just give the producer some new carpets, and then you got a cameo.
That'd be cool.
Like you're a celebrity.
You serve him at the drive thru and he's just like, hey, say, I do a little TV show.
Give me
over
a free
here.
Burger, yeah.
Do you want to come around? You can be the burger man.
It's how Chris got on this podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah. He give you a burger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found him at the McDonald's up the road. He doesn't work there. He just knew I was a man in need of a cheeseburger.
That's a sweet deal.
Yeah. He thought I worked there. That was the weird part. He just started being like,
yeah, right,
pushing money into my chest. And I was like, all right, I'm going to use a cheeseburger.
You just seem to know your way around the loose change menu.
That's true. Yeah. I'm a very thrifty McDonald's man.
But anyway, William Dozier had said that both shows, being the Netflix Lost in Space and the 1967 Batman show, appeals to the same audience. And he said, we estimate that 60% of our viewers are in the 4 to 12-year-old age bracket.
60%. So what? Does that not make sense?
I don't know. It's just we've been talking about this being a kid's show for much of the duration of
the
podcast.
Oh, you think that's very low for a kid's show?
Oh, no. I mean, I just think that's just good information to have, that they really did think they were doing this for kids younger than teenagers.
I mean, every episode has something bizarrely out of place that you would never put in a kid's show.
Like the other week with the milk and cookies.
Like milk and cookies, like in this one.
There was an episode, for those who may have missed that episode and for Chris in the room here.
I did miss that episode.
It ends with Bruce Wayne talking to a woman of whom he's interested in, with Lee Merriweather in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Bruce and Lee Merriweather are there at the end of a night. They've just gone out for a date and she invites him back into her apartment, okay, which is pretty risque for Batman. And Batman's like, no, I can't really do that. I've got to be up early in the morning. It's 10:30 at night. Like, it's not that late, Batman. But apparently he needs his naps. So, you know, we know that much. But she suggests, you sure you don't want to come in for some milk and cookies? And Batman turns to the camera and says, a crime fighter can't survive on crime fighting alone. And then I have a massive pash in the hallway, and then they go in the room.
The people watching this are
4 years old.
I was watching it with my 7-year-old son, and I had to stop it and explain and have the talk with him.
The cats and the bats.
Yeah, and he hasn't slept since. He hasn't had a wink of sleep, Chris.
I really like the concept of a horny Batman. I don't know the...
Sorry, has the phrase horny Batman been used on the podcast
yet? That's definitely the first time, Dan.
Can listeners, take a drink.
Yeah, sweet. Like, I love Prince's album for the first Tim Burton movie. And in that album, in the liner notes, he has every song to be kind of implied to be sung from the perspective of a character. Like, one's from Vicky Vale, one's from the Joker. There's one called Scandalous. And that song, in the way that most Prince songs are, is just undeniably horny. But he does it from the perspective of, I forget if it's Bruce Wayne or Batman, but it's Bruce Wayne and Batman and Vicky Vale. And the entire song is just a subtext of just like, yeah, Batman's gonna fuck Vicky Vale. Yeah. And it's great. And like, I love that album. It was just like, it's this weird, like, Prince's vision of Batman. And his Prince's vision of Batman is this like really funky and sensual dude. And I like the idea of his, like, the implication that, like, maybe Batman could deal with his inner demons a bit better if he took a load off every now and then.
Sorry, can you please define exactly what do you mean by take a load off? No, don't do that. This is a family-friendly podcast.
I know we need to move on, but can I just mention one very inappropriate for children thing that happened in these episodes?
Yes, sir.
That bit where Batman stabbed a dude and just like played around in his blood? Very weird.
Well, that sounds like it was an outtake. But
had a trident.
So the professor won't give up his formula. He has written it out, but he's forgotten how it works. Glacier Glaze comes in and says, what are you doing with the professor? And they're trying to get him to jog his memory or whatever. And Eli Wallach says, go, Glacier, go. And she kneels down next to him and starts caressing him and kissing him. And then it fades. What is happening there? What is she about to do? What is going on?
I think she was... warming his cool heart,
like with kisses and caresses.
Yeah, with milk and cookies. Like hot, like they're really, you know how like when you get cookies hot out of the oven that are kind of like melty and gooey, that type of cookie.
I like bringing the milk and cookies back into it.
Sorry, I was too busy thinking about horny Batman still.
Oh mate,
we probably need to mark a few moments of respect here. So this is the final appearance of Mr. Freeze in the Batman TV show.
Rest in peace, Mr. Well, until Batman and Robin.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but, you know, let's just say rest in peace.
Yeah.
We've also got the final installment here of two episodes a week. But also we've got the final appearance of Aunt Harriet as a regular in the show.
Oh, she's not regular anymore.
Aunt Harriet's always regular.
Well.
Aunt Harriet makes appearances a couple more times in the series, but she's not a regular. She's not part of the...
Oh, well, that's a shame. No, I was going to ask.
I think it was really sort of budget constraints. So the show not rating as well as it was, plus they had a new cast member coming through in the way of Yvonne Craig playing Batgirl.
Right. As a kind of dedication, would you like to do your famous Anne Harriet impression?
If you don't mind. No, we're not going to do that for reasons of good taste and decency, Nick.
Okay.
I like the bit in this episode where like Aunt Harriet and Bruce Wayne are backstage at the ice show and like they're in Glacier Glaze's green room. And like Glacier Glaze's like compact is on the table, which is actually a like two-way communicator with Mr. Freeze. And they walk in there and like Bruce Wayne's like, oh, hey, how are you doing? And like Aunt Harriet just beelines for that compact and starts like opening up and messing with it, being like, ooh, what's this? And it's like, chill out, lady. Like, I don't come into your house and like messing around with your like slot cars. Like, back off. It's really rude. You would think that like, is she the live-in nanny? Like Alfred, or is she just...
I thought she was a maid, but I think she just...
Like she just lives there because she's
dicks
up. She just
lives there.
Oh, right. Learn your place.
We like to talk to our guests on Batman Land, and as I think you're going to be one of our last guests that we have on, because we're shaking up the format like the show itself. It's going to be just myself and Nick from this point in, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
Sorry, Chris.
But can I come back for the beach blanket one?
No.
I want to see Surfing Batman.
Where he challenges the Joker against Surf Off.
Is that in the show or in the movie?
It's in the show. Oh,
all right.
Strap yourself in. There's some great stuff in season 3 to come. So obviously you're familiar with the show. When do you remember first watching Batman?
I remember watching it as a kid because my mum and I think my dad are both big fans of it. Like they grew up during that period of that show being popular. And I vaguely remember it being on just like TV. I think they used to play on TV1 on Foxtel, and I might have played on just a normal like free-to-air channel And I remember my mom put that on being like, oh, it's Batman. Like, I remember growing up and watching this and like, I love this. You like Batman, Chris. You're like 4 years old. Check it out. And like, I remember watching it and just being like, oh, this is cool. Like, even as a kid, I kind of thought it was a bit goofy. Like,
as a 4 year old.
Not as, I don't know, like 4, 5, 6 year old, but like Power Rangers was cool. But I felt like this was a bit goofier than Power Rangers.
That's
like,
interesting.
Rewatching Power Rangers as an adult, it's like, oh, this is, I imagine, as an adult watching Power Rangers now is how a lot of people who grew up in like the 60s and 70s feel watching that Batman show of like, oh, this is very like camp and ridiculous. But when I was a kid, it was the best and coolest thing ever.
Yeah. Tommy from the Power Rangers is less horny than Batman.
I don't know. He would probably say like if Batman's 10, he's probably 7, maybe an 8.
Yeah, sure.
Was that, as a child, was that the last time you had seen any of Batman before watching these episodes?
I have caught a couple of episodes airing on SBS Viceland. Insert,
I've heard of it.
Yeah. A little
shout out.
Little channel that could. I've caught a couple episodes.
7:30 Friday nights.
That's right.
There we
are. Fresh episodes. Repeats at the moment, Monday through Thursday from 6:30 to 7:30.
And on SBS On Demand.
Indeed.
Very nice. That's the drop I was looking for. yeah, like I've caught a couple episodes. My partner has never really has seen it. So I've just been like, I think I caught the episode with Green Hornet and Kato and just being like, oh, it's Green Hornet. And like, that's Bruce Lee there. And like, she'd never really seen this show before. And was just like, look at this, look at this.
And was she confused that Bruce Lee wasn't really doing anything?
A little bit. Yeah. She didn't realize until I was like, that was Bruce Lee. And she was like, that was Bruce Lee. And I was like, yeah.
Just some guy standing there.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, obviously, you're a big comics guy. Yes. When you think about Batman, like, who's your Batman? Do you think about Adam West? Do you think Michael Keaton? Do you think of the animated Kevin Conroy Batman? Like, or is it the comics Batman that you think of?
Animated series, definitely. Like, yeah. That's...
Really? That's... Yeah. I think he's the second or third person that said that.
It's generational, though. So, the younger people that we have in doing Batman Land is the animated series every time.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Like, my first memories of Batman are watching episodes of the animated series after school. And I have memories of seeing Batman Forever in the cinemas, but I feel like I was way too young to be seeing that in the cinema when it came out. I know I definitely saw Batman and Robin, but like Batman Forever, Batman Returns, and the animated series, those kind of like blur together in this like childhood haze of like, that's my first encounter with Batman.
Yeah, it was part of that glorious time where What's Up Doc used to be on in the afternoons on Channel 9 playing the Batman cartoon.
I remember that.
Yeah, who's by Katrina Roundtree.
Why doesn't anyone ever name the guy from the 40s?
Oh, the one who was in the super racist one with is the
it,
like...
Was it a racist one?
The movie serial?
Yeah, there's the... It's very like 1940s non-specific Asian villain with like the big buck teeth and stuff.
Is it? Does it?
Yeah, it's like super... Oh, it's no, that very like 1940s that. Like... We're going to refer to them as some kind of Oriental. And it's like, this is not aged well.
Nick, do you know why we don't have anyone who references that specifically? We haven't had any 85-year-old guests come into the studio.
Well, there's plenty more opportunities.
It is interesting talking about those original movie serials, and I think we've talked about it briefly on Batman Land before, but the reason the entire TV series exists is purely because the movie serials from back in the day became a bit of a hipster item with college kids. And so there was like a bit of heat around Batman. And because all the college kids were doing it, when William Dozier was looking for a like hip things put onto TV, he saw the college kids watching that. And so brought Batman to the TV screen.
Didn't Andy Warhol try and do a Batman thing? I know there's that like famous shot of him dressed as Robin and someone dressed as Batman.
Yeah, but it comes out of this countercultural sort of time where people were watching the Batman movie serials in university campuses.
That's like in the 60s, 70s, when like the big original boom of Marvel comics, Doctor Strange, the original like Steve Ditko, Stan Lee run was very trippy and psychedelic. And apparently that was always a really big hit with college students at the time. I think there's a Godard film where there's a Jack Kirby Captain America like poster in the background, or one of the guy's characters is reading it. But yeah, like Marvel at the time was like a big kind of like college students were real into it. And
yeah, very
stuff.
Much so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any hot take perspectives on Batman Forever and Batman and Robin?
I haven't watched Batman and Robin in a while. I think I probably might rewatch it after this. But like, I like Batman Forever. I shouldn't. I don't know. Like, well, that's the thing. Like, those have that, like, as an adult, I know it's bad, but I watched it when I was a kid, so I can't totally throw it out. Like, there's that weird nostalgic attachment to it.
I used to eat a lot of glue as a kid. I'm not sure I really have a lot of nostalgia for it, though.
That explains a lot.
You have a lot of attachment to it because it's glue.
Yeah, I got it.
Did you get it?
No, it's only ice puns.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So each week on Batman Land, we do like to look at the lessons that we've learned from the Bright Knight himself. Nick Bassane, let's go with you first. What did you learn from Batman?
So what I learned was about Batman himself. I thought, after watching hundreds of these episodes, that I knew everything there was to know about the Bright Knight. But apparently he carries fish in his utility belt.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely disgusting. But I guess it worked out. It's useful.
He has to reek, right? And like that has to be like a smell that carries. Like someone has to be like, man, why does Bruce Wayne always smell like dead sardines? That's bizarre. Also, Batman sells a lot like sardines. And they're alive as well.
And it would tip off. Was it a live fish?
Yeah, he's like, I always keep a live fish. Like he's doing Adam West is doing like the little like hand twitch to make it look like it's alive, but like it's absolutely dead. But he mentions it's alive. And it's like, how do you do that?
The psychosis of someone who dresses up like a bat to fight crime and carries live fish around with him in a belt.
The Batman Catwoman sexual dynamic makes a lot more sense if he's carrying around fish on him.
Oh, maybe that's what it's for.
Yeah. It's all about the catnip. Chris, what did you learn from the great man?
I learned that if it is cold outside, you should absolutely wear your super thermalized bat skivvies. Mm. And also, if it's very cold, you should also take your reverse thermal bat lozenge to keep warm.
Those are great lessons to take into winter this year. I learned that you don't actually, and I learned this through The Carpet King, you don't actually have to be a charismatic actor to appear on TV in a guest starring role.
Yeah, anybody
can
be
do it. Yeah, it's all fine. Hey, Nick Bassane, let's get out of here. This has been the end of another Batman Land. You're on social media, right?
Yeah, you can find me at Slot Cars or at Nick Bassane.
Excellent. Chris, you're on the socials?
Yes, I'm on Twitter. You can find me, my username is GarfLife, spelled GARFLYF. I named it that because I like Garfield the cat and I want to live a life much like that orange cat. So yeah, GarfLife.
Do you hate Mondays?
I hate Mondays. Love lasagna.
Okay, well, it all checks out. He's living a life.
If you guys end up doing like a Garfield Land podcast, I know a few things. Hit us up.
Okay, well, let's talk to management about that one. Now, Chris, you're going from comic book reader to comic book publisher.
Yeah, my big goal for this year was to publish a comic book, and I've completed an anthology book. It's 10 short comics. Every comic's themed around music, and they're all different. Like, one of them is a cartoonist, like, looking at how taste has been developed. One of them is this awesome Conan the Barbarian tribute to a King Gizzard album. And one of them is a like short explainer of how the band The KLF burnt $1 million one time. But yeah, it's called Meet Me in the Pit. You can find it on my Etsy store under Blueprint Comics. If you jump on my Twitter account, I imagine it'll be at the top of my Twitter pinned. But yeah, jump on there. It's like $10 an issue and yeah.
So I'm guessing by Etsy, you've got a print version and there's a digital version as well?
Yeah, I'm doing I think the print version is $10 and you can grab a digital version for $5.
Do you also make fun crafts?
Yes, I've got a bunch of like wallets made from seal skin.
Fantastic. Great. Folks can find me at the Dan Barrett. If you're talking about Batman Land on Twitter or your other social medias of choice, use the hashtag Batman Land. Helps people find and follow conversations, apparently. I hear that's how it works. If you like the podcast, leave a review, helps other people find the show. We've got a bunch of other podcasts you might like. We've got a Handmaid's Tale podcast called Eyes on Gilead. We've got the Good Fight podcast with the fantastically named The Good Fight SBS Fan Podcast. And of course, Batman Land is here each and every Friday
night.
What
I love about that name is that it tells you what it is.
It's right there on the label.
Yeah.
Batman, you can find on SBS Viceland every Friday night from 7:30 to 8:30, then followed by The Nude People from Adam Looking for Eve. You can also find episodes stripped Monday through Thursday nights from 6:30 to 7:30. Guys, this is the end of Batman Land for another week. We'll be back next week, same Batman Land time, same Batman Land channel, with added Batgirl. Very exciting.
Very exciting.